Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome back to
Too Niche.
This is a podcast where we haul, we ball.
It's basically like your favorite reel or TikTok, but in the audio format.
Love that. Elizabeth just got her hair colored and she's looking a lot like my queen, Lisa Barlow.
Highest of compliments.
And I'm very into the glam.
I just need a Kit Kat to wake my day up and I'll be all ready to go.
I need a Route 44 vanilla Diet Coke. So today we are taking things east to the country of Japan, where I just was for 2 weeks.
As you may have heard, Lara went on an adventure, and personal vision board goal of mine in the years and years I've been podcasting, I've always wanted to do audio format city guides. Dying to hear about the trip, dying to hear about the A's, the B's, the C's of it all.
Yeah, I'm ready to share. I'm ready to spill all the beans and try and give a sense of... So I traveled around Japan for 2 weeks with a couple friends of mine, and I'm ready to like give all of my travel tips and experiences and tell you what's like worth it, what's not worth it, in hopes that you too will curate your own Japan journey.
Maybe you're not planning on traveling to Japan anytime soon. Save the app.
Yeah. And
bank it.
Honestly, even if you're not planning on it, I would urge you to plan on it because you can get really good deals now. The yen is usually equal, like on par with the dollar, and things in Japan are just like a little more expensive. So the first time I went to Japan was in 2017, and it was pricey, but now the yen has gone down. So it's like about 30%, like the dollar stretches like 30% more than it did.
Love a deal.
So that's a really good price point to be fucking with. Cause like, I mean, you're still, certain things are still expensive, but you have to think like if this were 30% more expensive, it would be insane. And I just got like a notification that there are one-way flights right now to Tokyo. If you book between August and October, which I think end of September or any time in October would be good, you'd miss the hot times for like $257. So if you plan your trip and book right now, like say you found one of those flights, you might have to fly coach, which is a sad journey, but we all have been there and you work through it and you just become a little emotionally stronger.
It is our peasant era. It's okay.
But if you book now and then you also book hotels or Airbnbs in advance while the yen is still kind of underperforming, you can end up getting a really good deal because even if things get more expensive, you've booked when they were less expensive.
Hot tip.
I know. So then I had heard about my travel partner, Ed's, he was saying a friend of his did that for a trip where he's going like during cherry blossom season, but booked everything when like the yen went way down. So he got everything for like way cheap. And then I was like, wait, do I need to be doing this with various countries? Just look at when their currency is like tanking and then plan like a whole trip in advance based on that.
Probably.
It feels like...
Keep an eye on the markets.
Yeah, so I got a currency app and I was like looking through it. I'm always curious.
I'm so excited about this haul because I have never been to Japan. It's been on my bucket list. I was supposed to go with my friend and her husband. My friend, her whole family's in Japan, mm-hmm. and she spent basically every summer of her life and speaks fluent Japanese. Oh, so I always felt like that was the prime opportunity and the prime tour guide. Mm-hmm. However, she just had a baby, mazel tov to them, but not really great that's going to be on hold for like what, like 18 years, I guess. That
horrible trip for you.
Yeah, that's not working.
Wonderful for their family.
Yeah, so happy for them.
But really bad for
but
your
that,
Japan travel.
That like insider Japan trip track that I had always envisioned, not happening.
Well, here's the deal. Japan does a pretty good job of catering to Westerners. Like even on at train stations, everything, there's English translations of many of the train stops and lines. And when you go to buy like train tickets, you can choose English on in even like a lot of ATMs have that choice. So you're not going to be totally in the dark.
Okay.
Where you would really shine with a friend like that is like, if you want to go to like a restaurant that is kind of off the beaten path or like doesn't have a menu for Westerners or just someone who can kind of navigate a big meal in that way.
So you think like for Westerners, sans a tour guide, you can do this trip?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And
also, I used the Translate app on my phone like a ton because you can take pictures of everything and it would translate the text in the picture.
Gotta love tech.
So I was doing that a lot. And while the translation isn't perfect, it still gives you like an idea of what the deal is. And also it's like I was mostly using it for food items. And then if you get like a little adventurous with food or you just like choose something you don't really know what it is and like try it, that's never a bad thing.
Correct. Okay, so I think the best way, take us through your itinerary.
Okay.
Tell us all the bops, and I can't wait.
Okay, cool. So I think first things first on just like a basic travel tip, and I was told this by Ed, was that I was advised to get a pocket Wi-Fi thing to just travel with the whole time, because even though I have a cell phone that allows 5G or whatever, like international data, it still like wouldn't work. It does. It's really undependable.
Okay.
So Japan has like a company, and if you just Google like pocket Wi-Fi, you can sign up. I think it was like $100 for those 2 weeks. And basically you charge it every day and then your phone, you carry it around in your purse and your phone's always connected to Wi-Fi. And that was like crucial, because you just always want to be able to access like your Google Maps or just be able to Google anything you want.
So is that a way to skirt around getting service out there?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And you can just turn your, if you don't have international data, you mm-hmm. can turn your plane on airplane mode and just be connected to this Wi-Fi, and then you're good to go. You can still make FaceTime calls or FaceTime audio calls, and you're just traveling with your own little like Wi-Fi router.
That's an A tip right there.
And it's so great also because they will send the pocket Wi-Fi to wherever you're staying, and they send in the mail. So, and the hotel or Airbnb will just hold it for you, and they give you a return envelope. So whenever you're leaving, you just give it to the hotel lobby or like drop it in the mail, and that's how it's returned. It's like incredibly seamless in that way. So I loved that. So we started off in Kyoto, and I was there for maybe 36 hours tops. And my whole goal was to make the most of that time, because I've been to Kyoto before. Again, it was like only for 36 hours, but it's really beautiful. And it's like all these old temples. It's a mixture of like old and new, but there's just all these old temples, like Buddhist temples and Shinto shrines, and what a history. So I stayed in the Gion district, which is the historical district with all the oldest kind of buildings, and everything's like very quaint. And there's, it's like you'll walk out of the hotel and there's like a huge temple just on the same street. And I stayed at this hotel called Hotel the Celestine Kyoto Gion, which I would honestly give an A for price point. I think it's like $250 a night, so that's not too bad for two people. They take American Express points, so you can book with points if you have them. It's in a really walkable area that's like also very scenic, so it's good for sightseeing. And they have an onsen which is like basically a big hot tub, like soaking pool in their bottom floor that was crucial for like a post jet lag relaxation revive before dinner, like after a long day of walking around, to like go downstairs and do the whole like bathing ritual and then soak for like 20 minutes and then shower and then get ready for dinner was very relaxing and nice.
Sounds like a delight.
It was a delight.
I've read recently that those Japanese soaking tubs are a big in trend for outdoor home decor.
The Japanese bathing tradition and just like the cleanliness, both in the cities and then like commitment to bodily cleanliness, is next level.
It's important.
Yeah. There's no litter anywhere. I never saw like a piece of garbage drifting around the streets anywhere I went. And I can't say the same for this neighborhood.
That's inspiring.
Yeah.
It's nice to know that that exists somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also weirdly like no trash cans. So like if, which is not great, like say if you get like a bottle of water or something or like a to-go coffee, like you're not going to be able to throw that cup away anywhere, or you might have to like walk blocks and blocks and blocks until you stumble upon like a tiny trash can somewhere. So I think that that helps with like the littering, but you just have to be prepared.
It's a respect level.
You have to be prepared to carry a little trash.
Yeah.
Which I think is good and humbling, and
pack
everyone
in, pack
should.
Out.
Yeah. Also, I found out that that was like a law that went into effect after a terrorist attack where someone, like a cult, put, I want to say like gas bombs or something in trash cans. So then the government was like, well, we're getting rid of trash cans. They acted swiftly.
Wow.
And then cared about their citizens, which is
what a novel
crazy.
Idea.
Yeah. So day one, waking up in Kyoto, there's a light layer of snow on the ground. It's very scenic. It's beautiful. You're looking out the hotel window. There's just like snow on every rooftop. We decided to go to, I'm going to probably butcher this name, Arigashiyama Ward, which is where this like famous bamboo forest is. And most importantly for me, there's like a monkey park that's like at the top of a mountain where all these wild monkeys gather and you can like interact with them, feed them, take pictures of them. And it's just very much on my bucket list of things to do. So we set out to get to this like monkey park only to realize that it was closed. And we thought it would be closed all day, but I think it was just closed until like noon when the snow would stop melting. So then we walked around the bamboo forest, and there's like one of the oldest temples there, which has a gorgeous garden that was also covered in snow. And you're walking around things that are like 700 years old, and you just can't experience that in America because Americans just like destroyed everything that was 700 years old.
That's right. That's right.
So really like just to get to be around like that kind of preserved, like untouched cultural remnants is really special. And then also just to have like snow everywhere and be able to go on like long nature walks is also nice. Oh, another travel tip I would say is that you want to travel with like a lot of cash, because a lot of places, like touristy places that you have to pay an admission fee to get in, don't take credit cards or debit cards. So you just want to like exchange and get a lot of cash.
Did you just do that when you got off the plane, or what was at the hotel, or how?
I think the smart way to do it is like to do it with a bank, but you have to do it like way ahead of time and be really strategic about that. And I just like didn't give myself enough time. So I found a place at the airport that just charged like a fee of $12 to exchange a bunch of money at LAX. And so then I did that. And then one other time I just withdrew cash from an ATM. But yeah, I was like mostly using cash there as opposed to like my cards.
That's important to note.
Yeah. So we walked all around the bamboo forest. The snow's melting. It's like falling through sunlight in the trees. It's just like very, very scenic. And we kind of did a whole loop through these gardens and like temple grounds. And it spit us back out on the other side of the ward, walking back in the direction of the monkey park, which is like kind of, you end up walking along a river, and they had these little river boats that were manned by different captains, and they would take you up and down this river, and it was like really pretty. And we just kind of on a whim did this little boat ride, which I would say was also an A+ recommendation, because they have like a tiny little heater. It's a totally closed off room with like glass windows and a boat with like beautiful red like felt on the floor. You take your shoes off, you like get in the little cozy boat zone. They have like a tiny little furnace, and then this guy just like guides you up the river and down, and there are like ducks, and he gave us bread to feed the ducks, and we saw like influencers making content on the riverbanks.
You know it's good when there's more than one influencer spotting.
We're really getting the full Kyoto experience right now. And it was one of those just like on a whim things, which I would say when you're traveling, you should always just do. Because like, when else are you going to be able to do get in a little riverboat in Kyoto and like feed Japanese ducks?
Always wanted to do those little swan boats at Echo Park that I drive by every day. Still haven't done them.
That's the thing. It's like you have to do these little things.
No.
And there are just little, it makes you realize too about those, that there are just those little things in your own zone. But somehow it's more fun when you're not
when
in your own zone.
Flown to a different
country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where there's like not a lot of English speaking and you're like completely out
of
your element.
It's exotic.
Yeah. It's very exotic. So then we went to back to the monkey park because it was like around noon and we thought like maybe it'll be open now, because we couldn't really make sense of like the signage. Thank God it was open. It's like about a 20-minute hike through these like beautiful mountain trails with like ferns on the side of the mountain and like tall trees, and the snow's melting, and it's just, again, incredibly scenic. There's like a little old man sitting on a chair with like a fire blowtorch blowing off, like getting the snow melted off of the trail. And you go up to the top of the mountain and there are just wild monkeys all over this mountaintop that you can go in a tiny little gated cabin that has like open windows, but with fencing on the windows. So like the monkeys can't come inside, but you're inside and the monkeys are outside. And for like 100 yen, you can buy a little bag of like dried fruit or peanuts and you feed the monkeys. Like,
what's 100 yen in American?
I can't. This is a bad thing about me and why.
Mental math
is a true absolute no for me. It's also bad when you don't have, when you're operating on just cash, I just go into a place of like, I've already spent the money. So like here, just like take it because it's already like cash.
75 cents.
Yeah. So, okay. So yeah, in past times, that'd be about $1. But since it's like the 30-ish, 25-ish percent thing. Yeah. So you feed You're literally like giving them peanuts. They take it out of your hand with their little monkey paws and eat them. And there's baby ones, there's adult ones. There was like a lot of monkey drama where they would sometimes fight each other or like ruffle each other's feathers. They run around, they climb up the walls. It is, if you're an animal lover, a top spot to go to.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's a view of all of Kyoto from this mountaintop. So not only do you get the pleasure of interacting with these monkeys, you also get to like look at the beautiful city from a high vantage point. And you get steps in with a big old hike.
Steps.
Yeah. This area also, if you're like bawling out, is right next to Hoshinoya, Kyoto, which like the Hoshinoya Hotel Empire, they have, it's Goop approved, A. So like on the Goop guide, when I was looking at things to do in Kyoto, it was like stay at Hoshinoya Hotel, which I would absolutely love to do were it not like $1,400 a night. But they do also take Amex points. So if you are flush with points, maybe that's a hot tip. But the location is good if you are looking maybe for like one night and you wanted to stay in this specific district of Kyoto and get a whole bamboo forest, temple gardens, monkey park thing. You literally could walk out your hotel door of a beautiful Goop approved hotel and walk right up the monkey mountain and be in monkey heaven. So something to think about.
Yeah, something for next time.
We stayed at the Hoshinoya in Tokyo, which was like incredible. And then Ed does a lot of like travel writing. So he got some free stays at hotels like over the course of our trip. And the Hoshinoya are like the high end ones. But then below that are properties called Kais. And those are still really nice. And so we stayed at a Kai like when we went up north. And I'll get to that. But that was a highlight for me too. So we ended that we set out early. And the good thing also about Hotel the Celestine Kyoto Gyan is they have a breakfast buffet that you can either prepay for or pay on the days that you decide to partake. But they serve both traditional Japanese breakfast foods and Western breakfast foods.
How'd the buffet hold up?
The buffet was good. And that's what also sold me on making that reservation, because I saw the pictures of a really good buffet and I had heard that the buffet slapped. And I'm proud to report that the reviews weren't wrong.
And it's important in any travel case, you got to get a firm base before you set out for your day.
Absolutely. And like we were miraculously not jet lagged like on the way there, but still we're waking up at like 6:30, 7 a.m. And their buffet opened at like 6:30 a.m. So it was perfect timing. Great way to go in. And the way they operated this buffet, much like everything else, seamless, top line. They give you a glove, like a plastic glove that you wear every time you go to the buffet. So no one is making skin contact with any handles.
I love that so much.
No, it was next level. And so
maybe we could still have the Erewhon salad bar if they could implement something like that.
I know, like maybe the Four Seasons buffet would still be happening if someone would wear a fucking glove. It's like not that hard. You realize like the Japanese are just operating on a whole new level of seamless innovation that Americans cannot seem to grasp. And it's deeply unfortunate.
Deeply.
And you do have to wear masks pretty much everywhere still in Japan. I mean, if you go into stores or restaurants, mostly like stores, you're expected to wear a mask and someone might ask you. People are also wearing them out on the streets, just like walking around, which when everyone's doing it, you kind of just do it too. That's like
I'm fine with that. That feels like a considerate action.
Yeah. And it's kind of just the way that things worked over COVID in Japan. I talked to like a lot of people that were like living there over that time, and they never closed businesses. They never had stay at home orders. Basically, the government just said wear masks and do temperature checks at every restaurant, store, and do hand sanitizer everywhere. And we'll just like leave things open and things will be chill. And everyone was like, okay. And they closed off their country and didn't let anyone like go in and out. But to be closed into Japan, we could only be so lucky. So you do wear masks. I mean, sometimes I didn't when I was walking around outside and no one really cares, but you'll notice that most Japanese people are wearing masks. So you can stand out and be like a gaijin, which means outsider, or you can just like assimilate. And now I kind of feel weird when I'm not wearing a mask. So they basically programmed me back into mask life. So from the monkey park, we were really hungry. My friend Ryan and I decided we would go to Nishiki Market, which is a basically like a 5-block marketplace that has all sorts of food stands. They have like little shopping stands that sell like pottery or knives or chopstick holders, little knickknacks. And we just like went wild there eating our way kind of through the market. They have like a lot of seafood stands where you could order like just like have someone barbecue up like some shrimp for you on like sticks. Or we had like a giant oyster. We had
living your best Bourdain.
Yeah, it was very Bourdain-esque. And it would just be like you pop into somewhere and you're like, oh, I want to try this.
Cool.
And it's also the kind of place like I read ahead of time, you're not, they don't want you to walk and eat at the same time. Like you cannot do that. And people will like dress you down if you try and like take a step and eat something. I think it's considered disrespectful. Rude. There's usually like places to stand where you can stand and eat. Or they'll like clear out like a place. There's like seating areas in these tiny little places and they'll clean it out. And like,
what was the best thing you had to eat at the market?
I had some really good like gyoza. That oyster was wild just because it was so big. Everything is good. That's also the thing about Japan is it's really hard to find food that's not good. We did manage to find at dinner the one restaurant that was not good. It was like a yakitori place that just did meats on sticks or like little kind of shish kebab menu. But I think it's also like I didn't make a dinner plan that night. I was kind of like, let's just wander and like see what we find. And we, I think, stumbled into a place that was a fixed price menu for like Westerners that just was like, it just like wasn't that good. But everything else, like you can kind of just go into 7-Eleven and get a rice ball and it's like delicious. They have these rice balls with different fillings. Like I like the pickled plum one so that it'll have like some pickled plums in the middle and then just rice and like fresh crunchy seaweed. And they're $2.
Pickled plum. Yeah. I've never even thought of that.
It's really delicious.
Okay.
But they have at 7-Eleven or Family Mart or just like convenience stores, you can get chips or just good snacks that are yummy and cheap.
I love that.
Yeah, love that. So we ate our way through Nishiki, shopped a little bit. Japan is weirdly, there's a real, I think they've always been kind of on a normcore tip, but right now I was noticing that the normcore collegiate aesthetic is really popping off, and especially like secondhand stores. So we would go to all these secondhand stores and it would be like racks and racks of like university, like American university sweatshirts. And they're really well curated and like great quality, like vintage sweatshirts. But I was just like, this is so funny to me because
I'm sort of really into that.
Yeah. Like we went into, I didn't realize this either, but like American Rag has outposts in Japan. Yeah. So there was one in Tokyo that we were staying near. And I was like, let's just see what they have going on. And they also had a rack of the university sweatshirts. And my friend that I was traveling with was like, they have a Maryland University sweatshirt like that was in the town that I grew up in here in like Tokyo. So it's just very much a thing.
Also, side note, a really, really good place for vintage university sweatshirts is Etsy.
Yeah.
Like they've got a wild selection. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend.
The university sweatshirt trend is alive and well.
Niche.
And does not seem to be going anywhere soon.
Did you do like nightlife?
We went out because that was like Saturday night. So we went to Pontocho Alley, which was walking distance from the hotel, like kind of in that older district, and has like a lot of tiny little like hole in the wall restaurants. And you can tell the ones, this is where it would be good to be with a Japanese speaking person, because a lot of the restaurants, I think, don't cater to Westerners, or like you can tell what does when they have like an English menu or any sort of English on the outside of the building. But then a lot of them didn't. And like, obviously it creates my sense of need where I need to go in the one, like I want to go to the ones that like no one speaks English and they have like amazing food, but you have to be like in the know to like get in there. So this is where we made a crucial misstep by going in this like yakitori place that we did not love the meal. You live and you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then we tried to go like bar hopping. We like stumbled into like a whiskey bar. A lot of the bars are like very small and only fit like maybe a few people in them, like five or six people.
Dreams.
And it's also like kind of awkward because a lot of the people probably don't speak English and it's going to be quiet. Like there's sometimes just no music playing in restaurants or bars. And that's just like a thing that you kind of have to come to terms with, like, it's silence. It's like
you're on the set of a Real Housewives scene.
They also charge, which is why you should carry cash. A lot of them do cover charges to come and sit in. So you might have to pay like 500 to like 2000 yen, depending on where you're going to sit in. I don't know if that's specifically something that they say for Westerners, which if they do, like props, you got to do what you got to do. Yeah. Or if it's just kind of the way of the culture. But so we were stumbling into like a few bars, but then I think getting like awkwarded out that it was a little quiet and like would find out that one bar is like just a whiskey bar and neither of us are whiskey drinkers. But if you are a whiskey drinker, you're in the right place because there's like really good Japanese whiskey. But we found a bar called Wine Bar, which I was like craving like a glass of wine. So we saw this bar, Wine Bar, and decided to go in there. It was the two of us, the bartendress, I think her male companion, and then two little old ladies sitting and just sipping like French wines. And I was like, okay, don't mind if I do. It's really cozy in here. Like, we're going to hang in Wine Bar. And there was a bit of a language barrier. There was like a pretty much no English speaking going on, but then they did have an English menu of like wine. So we had a couple glasses of wine and then chilled. It was very, very quiet. We were like slightly whispering, kind of trying not to make as much of a scene. It was like out of a movie when we walked in there. There was light music playing, but like we opened the door and walked in and then everything, I swear to God, even the music like shut off and it was like very silent. And it's hard to tell sometimes, I think, if you're like welcome, like, because the last thing I want to do is like harsh anyone's vibe as like a traveler. So it was hard to tell, like, are they okay with us being here? Do they want us to like get the fuck out? But then I started to learn that if someone wants you to not come in or get the fuck out, they make that very clear, like from the jump.
That's good.
Yeah. There were definitely a few places over the course of the time we were in Japan where we would go to hail a cab or go in one of a small bar. And usually you'll get like this sign.
That's an two hands making an X.
Two hands making an X and like a firm head shake and like an absolutely not.
Copy.
Yeah. And you're like, got it. Thank you so much. But like pretty much everywhere
else. Honestly, I love a boundary.
I respect it. So that's like good to know because I think as Americans, we're used to people being like, hey, get in here. Like, welcome to blah, blah, blah. Like making more of a scene.
Yeah.
And like, it's just a different vibe. And especially it was a different vibe in Wine Bar. And plus I was traveling with someone who's 6'7" and I'm also pretty tall. So we were making a splash and I think it was a little jarring for two giants to show up in Wine Bar at like 8:30 p.m. Oh on God. A Saturday night. So
I love it.
We sat in there, we had a couple drinks and my friend went to pay and like the two little old ladies that were sitting in there were like looking at me and they were like, he's so tall, like making like, I was like, I know. And they like could not get over like how big he was, which he is like an exceptionally tall man. But they were like really shocked by it, which I was also loving. I was like, yeah, I know. He's a giant. It's crazy. So really shout out to Wine Bar in Kyoto. And I highly recommend you go there.
Goop, you missed that one.
Goop really missed out, but it is in that Pantocho Alley area.
Okay.
And if you are needing to get like a wine fix, they have like a good curation and a cozy vibe.
Things I love.
The pores of wine though.
Tiny.
Tiny.
I could imagine.
Which was a shocking thing to me to learn. I was like, is this wine bar only doing this? But then as I had like wine on some other nights, it's like a light pour.
I haven't drank since last year. I'm still on the no alcohol.
I'm proud of that.
I'm proud of it too, but throughout this conversation, I'm having an insatiable craving for sake right now in a way that's I can't even deal with.
You would. Okay, so one of my friends that I was traveling with, Ed, he has like a very specific vibe that he's looking for in sake when he orders it, and found the best way to communicate that was like he wanted like a mellow sake that's like not too dry but not too sweet. And I guess like the terminology or the way it translated was asking for something mellow.
Okay.
And we did cold sake for a majority of the meals, and it's my favorite. An absolute delight, because every time that you order it, like it'll come in like a different vessel. So you just get a really good mixture of glassware or ceramics or like just different presentation of the sake.
I will say that I interviewed Dave Asprey once, you know, like the male biohacker bulletproof guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that sake was the best alcohol anyone can drink. So
why?
I think just because of the process in which it's made. It's like the cleanest. It doesn't have as much of an effect on your system.
That makes a lot of sense. I went to a sake factory or sake brewery in this tiny town that we went to called Kurashiki. And we got like an insider's tour. I guess like no one's supposed to go in this sake factory after they've started making it. But like, they let us in, and I got to like go climb a ladder to the top of like a big batch of sake that was in the process of being fermenting and doing whatever before it was ready to be like harvested is not the right word. I don't know what the word is, but I got to stick my head over it and like waft in the scents, and it was incredible. And you know what else was happening in this brewery? One of the guys that worked there took us through like the entire process of like how they wash the rice and then lay it out, and they like dry it out and chop it up and make it into like a very fine powder mixed with sugar. And then they go through a full fermenting process with like a very specific kind of water. And he said in the fermenting room, when they mix the rice powder with water, he plays Mozart and classical music to all the water, like while the sake is brewing, because for the vibes.
Sorry, New York Times.
Yeah. So I was just like loving that. And I was like, I felt really validated being like a water head and knowing what is right
positive
and wrong.
Positive vibes when it comes for the water.
Water vibes. Yeah. After wine bar, we were tired. We went to sleep. And then the next day, we had a 2 p.m. bullet train to get from Kyoto to Tokyo. So I was like, I want to do something really epic that will like take up the morning, and something that I haven't done. Oh, we also went to the Golden Pavilion the day before. I think we hit Golden Pavilion right before Nishiki Market. It's really stunning. It's like temple covered in gold leaf that's sitting on a lake. It's like very picturesque, scenic, beautiful, but also incredibly touristy and like packed. And so that was not very soothing, because you're just elbowing through tons of people.
Would you say worth it or skip it?
I'd say worth it, but I think you should try and go there really early in the day to like beat the crowds, and you'll still be able to get a good picture and stuff, but it's just more serene when there's not that many people there.
What was this bullet train experience like?
The bullet train is amazing. I booked tickets in advance. I think you can buy day of either at the train station. Like, the good news is if you get confused by any train stuff, like if you're going especially from like one major city to another major city, or you're trying to like commute somewhere, many train stations will have offices that you can go in and speak to someone and be like, I'm trying to get from here to here, can you help me, and like what's the best way? And you can buy a ticket just directly through them, and they'll tell you everything you need to know. For the bullet train, I use this app called Klook that does discounted train tickets, but you have to buy in advance. So like bullet trains are more expensive. The tickets probably cost like $150 a person, but they're really fast. So you go get between like Tokyo and Kyoto in 2 hours. And I just like bought the first class green, which is called green car tickets, which I personally love like a high-end train experience.
I'm shocked.
And so I craved a green car always. And what I like about it is even the main cars are fine too. Like you're still going to be comfortable. But like green car has a little ledge that you can put your feet on in front of your chair. And I'm not a person, I don't like to stretch out my legs and be like sitting like this on anything. Like I'd much rather have something that I can rest my feet on and have my feet like slightly elevated. And all the trains have Wi-Fi. So I was able to get like a little bit of work done. And in the green car, you have people coming by selling snacks or coffee or just taking your trash from you or giving you like hot cloths to like wipe your hands. Dreams. And it's just really nice. And what's amazing on all trains, anywhere you go, is that people just, it's a no talk policy. It's like a silence is golden. You just do not make any noise and no one else makes a lot of noise. And it's very, very peaceful. Even in the subways, you're not going to walk into a subway and be like accosted by like someone playing their like electric guitar and like tap dancing or like panhandling. You're not going to get in a car and have people like screaming. Like it's just, you're going to be on a very streamlined journey from point A to point B and everyone's going to be totally silent. And if they do talk, they're whispering. There's nothing like
it. I'm sold on the culture.
No, it was wild. I've never, like, looking through a subway car that's like hurtling underground and being like, everyone is just completely still, quiet, and like respectful of everyone else's space. It's unreal.
I love that.
Yeah. So I decided, like, before we would get on the train, that we would go to Fushimi Inari, which is one of the oldest Shinto shrines in Japan. And so I didn't really know like what Shinto was like until we went there. And then I was like, this is wild. I thought it was a form of Buddhism. I was incredibly wrong. Shinto is like its own religion. It's basically the top two religions in Japan that kind of have managed to coexist and not step on each other's toes are Buddhism and then Shinto, which was like their indigenous religion that dates back to like forever and ever ago. And it's like very nature based and like gods based. And there's all these shrines and you've probably seen like this shape before. Yeah. So like that kind of like gate shape is the sign that there's like a shrine around.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So this pathway up this mountain, which is about like a 2 hour total hike if you want to go all the way up to the top of the mountain and then around and back down, which we decided we wanted to do. You go through like hundreds of these like bright orange gates that like lead you up this stone path and weave all through this mountain and then back down. And there's little stop-offs where all these hills and hills of shrines are, and they're just, it's just all so old that you're like, this has existed for so long and like has been around just forever, and people still will come there to like say prayers or like have do whatever like religious things they do with the shrines. And you can buy a lot of, they have different stop-off points where you could buy good luck charms or stuff that you would leave traditionally at the shrines. Like it's like a very like religious place, but then also just a great hike and
steps.
Yeah, you're getting your steps in, you're getting views. There's little restaurants and stop-offs every few hundred meters that serve matcha teas and matcha lattes or noodles, or you can like have lunch and then continue on your hike. And like on the way down, there's all these restaurants too. And like, it's free to enter. The only thing you would pay for is if you stop off to like have a drink or buy a bottle of water or something. But it was a very cool experience and I would highly recommend it. It's like just visually stunning. You're in nature. It was snowy on one side of the mountain, like because the snow hadn't melted. So it was very like winter wonderland, and then like warm sunlight peering through the trees on the other side of the mountain. And then you feel good because you've climbed a mountain.
Check, check.
I love the bullet train. Green car gets an A+ from me, especially going from Kyoto to Tokyo. You'll see Mount Fuji like out the window, which is just like a scenic, lovely thing. And it's really fast, gets you there in a timely fashion. I found an incredible Airbnb in Tokyo that fit me and the two of my friends that was like right in Harajuku and had like a wraparound huge deck. Like it was like a fifth floor apartment that you could see just like all of Tokyo like from the deck.
Great. I feel like views. A strong Airbnb rec is crucial.
Yeah. And what's even weirder is that it just so happened when I was looking to be open for the exact days that I was looking to book. I was like, this is a match made in heaven. Yeah. Like it was, we were meant to be in this Airbnb, but I would be happy to like drop the link for
it. We're going to put all of the recs in the show notes.
Also like the attention to detail in the Airbnb instructions, I've never seen anything so comprehensive or like immaculate, where it was down to like photos with arrows of what, how to put numbers in stuff, like where the key is, how to open the box. Like there were no questions left unanswered.
I like that.
Yeah, it was like extremely comprehensive, like no way to have like a bad check-in experience. It was
great. What were the vibes in terms of like comparison from Kyoto to Tokyo?
Tokyo is just like way more urban, seemed more crowded, obviously. And where we were staying in Harajuku is like a lot of shopping, like a lot of touristy stuff, but just like a hustle and bustle kind of like downtown energy, which I like. And if the weather is not like, I've been there walking around before, like when it was kind of rainy, which wasn't great because everyone has umbrellas and then you're kind of trying to navigate your umbrella, but then maybe trying to navigate not being poked in the eye by other people's umbrellas. And it just is like not as fun. But this was like, it was chilly, but not crazy cold. And there's just so much to like do and see, and it's next to good restaurants. Animal cafes are obviously a huge deal in Harajuku and like Tokyo. And I went to a pig cafe that was A++++++, cannot recommend enough if you're into an interactive animal vibe that does not feel, I don't want to ever feel like an animal's being like abused.
Sure.
Or like, I'm not one to go to like an exotic animal cafe. They do have like owl cafes there, but I heard that that was like a dark scene because like these beautiful owls are like chained and then you like sip matcha and like.
So you did a pig one.
So you did a pig one that was like micro piglets, and it was like obviously very clean. I was expecting like maybe like a kind of pig smell. No smells. These piglets are trained. They literally have like their own little bathroom boxes that whenever they needed to pee or poop, they would just like trot excuse over themselves. So that they would excuse themselves from your lap, walk over to their box, do their business. And then one of the attendants would like clean it up really fast and was like, it never happened.
Great.
And they give you blankets that you can put over your lap, like a cozy fleece blanket, and you sit on the ground and these piglets just swarm you and like sleep on you and let you pet them, and they're like making their little oink sounds, and it just is true heaven on earth.
Wow. How much does that cost?
I think it's like maybe $20 or less per person.
Hey, Did you do any other animal ones?
I did a Shiba Inu cafe. And they were so cute. A room full of Shiba Inus, and they were specifically like the smaller kind. I guess there's the Shibas that get really big, and these were the ones that stay pretty small. Probably like 25 Shibas in this cafe.
Beautiful.
But I will say that while I did enjoy it and like I love to look at them, the Shibas weren't taken kindly to Westerners or white people. Mm. They very much had a preference of Japanese or Asian people in the cafe. And I was like, guess what?
I can't fault
you for that. But like they literally would try and kind of pet one and it would like run away from you and then go lay in like someone else's lap.
Probably some past experience with some bad egg Westerners.
Yeah, they were just not having the gaijin energy, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But I would still recommend it as far as you get to sit in a room with like really cute dogs. And that one was maybe $8.
How long were you in Tokyo for?
I was in Tokyo for 3 days.
Okay.
We did the Park Hyatt Hotel, like the famous hotel from Lost in Translation. Like, I would say, go there, have a drink. We did a drink like before dinner one night, and it's like insane views of all of Tokyo. It's so high up, but it really was like, it's like more Westerners in mm-hmm. that bar. Like, I felt like I didn't see a lot of like other white people or like Euro types of people wherever we went, but then there would be some places where you'd be like, okay, this is where all the white people are going, which is takes away a little bit from the trip, but it's still like a very chic bar and good for a martini. And then maybe if they're playing like jazz, you get in on that too. We had dinner at this really good, like kind of, it's not like yakitori. It's like a lot of grilled dishes, some meats on skewers, some like fish, a lot of different fish, but they also serve sushi and grilled vegetables. It's called Teppen, T-E-P-P-E-N. You have to crawl through like a little tiny doorway to like get in the restaurant. And it also is mostly Japanese speaking. They have like an English language menu that they'll give you, but like it's definitely like we were the only like Westerners in there, and we got like a lot of stares when we came in, I think because of my tall friend. But you can feast in there and drink sake to your heart's desire, and I think it was maybe like $60 a person for a big old dinner out, which was like a good vibe.
Yeah.
And they do make a whole scene about grilling a specific type of fish, and they, I mean, I don't know what they're saying, but I was loving it. And they, the chefs like do all the grilling like right in front of you, and he makes this like one huge piece of fish on like an open fire grill with hay that he like lights the hay on fire and then like puts it under and over this fish, so it gives it like a different kind of flavor. And then you have the option to like try the fish if you want. So I would highly recommend that. It's delicious and feels like you're having like a Bourdain moment.
And we love a crawl space.
Yeah, love a crawl space. We went to this other restaurant called Arakicho Tenpaku that has the most delicious like grill Kobe beef that they grill, and they serve with like a little green and red like pepper spread, I guess. And we've gone there before. We've gone to both of these restaurants before when we've been in Tokyo, but when we go, it's just like we'll order like plates and plates and plates of this beef, and it's just delicious. And it's run by this chef that is like really obsessed with a lot of like dick imagery. So there's like randomly like in the little like soy sauce dishes are these ceramic dishes that also have like a dick on them. And there's like all this like dick art on the walls. And like he will wear like the dick merch kind of. And I don't think okay. he's gay. I think it's just like a just dick like friendly restaurant.
It's a
phallic experience with just some delicious food.
Okay.
Sushi and Kobe beef. And yeah, I can't recommend that enough. That was an A+ as well. Kurashiki is a tiny, tiny town in the south that we went to. And we stayed at a ryokan there called Ryokan Kurashiki.
What's a ryokan?
A ryokan is like a traditional Japanese, almost like their version of a bed and breakfast.
Okay.
But it's like you take your shoes off when you arrive there, and like they will give you robes, and you basically like can walk around just at all times in like a kimono and in like slippers that they provide.
Cozy soft girl.
Yeah, soft girl vibes. And you, they have, it's like tatami mats on the floors of the room, and in like really traditional ones. Like I stayed in like one of their traditional rooms. There's no bed in there during the day, and there's like a seating area, and you'll see like the washi paper kind of slider doors and windows. But then at night, like when you go to have dinner, they'll come in and make like a tatami bed for you, so that you come back to your room and there's like a whole bed like laid out.
Is it comfortable?
It's comfortable. Yeah. Okay. I liked it. And it's like you're kind of sleeping on the floor. Like it feels like a slumber party. They also have like more westernized rooms to stay in, but I'd never been
when
in like
Rome.
Yeah. I'd never stayed in like a traditional ryokan like that. And then they breakfast is oftentimes like baked into the experience. A lot of them will include breakfast and dinner in the per person price, because I think for ryokans it's less about like the room costs this much a night, it's like this per, it costs this much per person per night. And they serve like traditional Japanese breakfast, which is tons of little tiny dishes of like rice or fish, or usually like a house-made tofu, miso soup, maybe another like hot pot soup with like fish or tofu in it, pickled vegetables. Like it's all these like very cute, pretty little dishes. There's typically like a yogurt and maybe like a little tiny sweet treat. But the goal is to get a really good base going, get like a lot of good like umami flavors, but not feel too full. You want to like set the tone for the rest of your day. And then they'll serve a dinner that's called like a kiseki, which is a coursed out, like probably like a 2 hour long dining experience with like 10 different courses. Some of like sushi, grilled fish, grilled vegetables, like a hot pot. It ends with like a rice and like a miso soup. But those are really delicious too.
Yum.
Yeah.
I'm having full cravings right now.
No, it's insane. And ever since I've been back, I was like, I need to do some like more Japanese cooking around these parts.
Did you ever go to Itsukai Osen in Silver Lake?
No, but I've heard that that's really good.
Blow up that spot. It is my favorite place for Japanese food.
Okay.
And I've had a lot of friends who've been to Japan and say it reminds them of a little like Japanese bistro.
Okay, I love that.
So I need your take on it, because I'm actually probably going to have to go there tonight because I'm in a full zone now.
Yeah, I've been just making like in the mornings white rice with, I'll just crack like an egg yolk over hot rice and like mix it up, and then put a little bit of pickled plum in there.
Where are you finding the pickled plum?
You can get them. That brand Eden makes them. It's called like ume,
okay,
or umeboshi, which is like the just like a pickled plum paste. Either one will do. And like I put that in there just as like a tangy, vinegary, salty.
Do you have a favorite Japanese word that you learned?
I learned that when you say thank you, it's more traditional and like formal slash respectful to say arigato gozaimasu. That means like thank you very much, and like something you would say rather than saying like arigato to someone. Like you might say that to your friend, but like people will say that a lot to you, like, and then you say it back to like cab drivers or waiters or anyone like kind of in service or anyone that you don't know like that.
It's a good blanket phrase to have in your pocket when visiting. Yeah, for sure.
And I will say you get like thanked a lot in Japan. You get thanked for basically existing, which I love. And then you thank people. It's a very thank you kind of culture. You're just, everyone's like very thankful and to and of each other. And I enjoy that as well.
Same. And very much.
A high level of just respect and attention to detail on all sorts of things. So yeah, just like a baseline precedent is really good.
Essential.
Mm-hmm.
What other A's?
Okay, so the Ryokan and Kurashiki was an A because also there was like a little river. It was like on a canal that used to be used for transporting sugar and rice. And the Ryokan itself, I believe, used to be a sugar factory. So this little canal like goes through the old part of the town. And there's like just koi fish in this canal naturally, which I'm a koi head. Like nothing soothes me more than a koi fish. And just to walk out the door of where you're staying and like look at a beautiful canal that's like hundreds of years old and there's just like beautiful koi in there was a very soothing experience. And just the food was amazing and it was a great place. I would highly recommend staying there. We went to Naoshima Island, which is an art island that was, I guess, taken over or owned by one specific wealthy family. I would recommend going there. And a good way to go there is to do what we did, where you stay in Kurashiki and then you have to travel about like an hour and a half via like trains and a ferry to get to Naoshima. It also has hotels on the island, so you could do that. But I don't know, it might be worth it to stay on the island because it has some like really high-end art hotels that will have, like one of the hotels has a James Turrell exhibit in the hotel that you cannot see unless you are a guest.
James Turrell, like what they have at Schwartz and Sandy's?
James Turrell, exactly, like the Schwartz and Sandy's installation on your way to the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah. So the museum that we went to that truly blew my mind was called the Chichu Museum. And it's built by this Japanese architect, Tadao Ando. And it's like a compound built into the ground. So you cannot see it from the outside. Like it doesn't disrupt the natural like landscape. And it houses a whole room of Monets, three James Turrell pieces, and then this massive Walter Maria installation that basically I like can't accurately describing it is almost impossible. It's just like a huge open room with like a massive marble sphere in it and these like golden pillars all around. It feels very sci-fi, like 2001 Space Odyssey. It also feels oddly like a church or somewhere religious. But you can't take any photos like once you enter this museum. So it's just all like you have to like just be in the moment and vibe.
How very San Vicente bungalows.
Yeah. And so I would highly recommend like a day trip to go see this museum and then also walk around the island. There's all these like Yayoi Kusama like pumpkins around. She's really having a moment right now, like doing her Louis Vuitton collaboration and has pieces on this island. And there's various other like art museums to visit. And a lot of the local people that live there donated their houses to the like art project. So a lot of the houses in like the very old neighborhoods have been turned into art installations on the inside. So like there's one house that was turned into like just a James Turrell installation. You go in and it's basically just like a dark room. It's like pitch black and you just sit in it until your eyes slowly adjust to see like this tiny sliver of like gray and you have no sense of how big the space is. Like you have no sense of if what you're seeing is something you're really seeing or if your eyes are playing tricks on you. Like it's very cool in that way. And it's like about 15 minutes of like just sitting in absolute silence and like letting your eyes adjust. So, and I like that kind of stuff, is just psychological tests of endurance. And there's just cool little places, like a bunch of these art houses to like bop around into and little noodle shops. And I
What was your noodle consumption levels? Because mine would be off the charts.
Mine was pretty high.
Okay.
We had udon there. I had like delicious noodles like in the airport, in like Haneda Airport, flying to like Sapporo. Like you can go in an airport and get an $8 huge bowl of noodles that's going to be one of the top 10 noodles you've ever had in your life. You go in an airport and seamless from beginning to end, very easy to like check in, go through security, get like a delicious meal, maybe do a little bit of like shopping, get like a little matcha treat or something, and then go to your gate without any sort of stress. You're not like navigating sweaty people, like crowding your personal space. You're not spending an arm and a leg on like the shittiest food of all time. It's just, you're soothed. Japan again.
Japan.
The other A plus was, well, Osaka was an A plus city for me. Even though we were there for less than 24 hours, it was like being in a sim city. It's just like skyscrapers as far as the eye can see. Everything, I think it was very much destroyed during World War II. So then it was rebuilt as very kind of urban city, skyscrapers, high rises, highways. And it feels like you're in a simulation or like in the Matrix in a video game. Really good food. We stayed, I had been researching online like what the best place to stay was if you're just kind of coming in and out and you're like a total newbie to the area. And found a recommendation for like the Swiss Hotel, which is built either on top of or right next to one of the main train stations. And it's in an area that's a very food heavy area. So we stayed there. I would highly recommend it. It was not expensive, very accessible. If you need to like go to the airport from there, you can just go literally into the train station, hop on a train and go to the airport very easily. And the nightlife there was fun. Like we went to like a girls club called Burlesque Bar and watched like burlesque performances and chatted with like the girls there, which their bar culture and like specifically for these types of bars is very much like you go in and you pay a cover charge to sit and talk with the women that work there. And it's not like, you know, in some strip clubs, you feel like a really seedy vibe. Yes. Or it's, yeah, the vibes are not seedy in these places. Women might be dressed in like a rabbit, like Playboy bunny lingerie, but they're skilled in the art of conversation. And so you're paying to like talk to them and they will, usually it's like a chart, like it's like they say 20,000 yen or not 20,000, it's like 2,000 yen for an hour, all you can drink and you can smoke cigs in there, and which is like great. And you talk to the women that work there and have like a lovely conversation, and they fill your glass every time it gets low, and they clean, like change out the ashtray every time, each time you smoke a cigarette, they light your cigarettes for you.
Do they speak English?
Some of them do. They paired us with like a couple Russian girls that worked there because they were English speaking. But then we also talked to some Japanese girls that were working there that spoke pretty good English. But it was nice.
And I like that.
There was no nudity at the ones we went to, and it was just cool to go in a space like that where you also get like a great performance and
a chat.
The other A plus place, Ed and I flew north to Hokkaido and stayed at Kai Portoro, which is part of the Hoshinoya Hotel like group. And that was stunning, in winter wonderland on a frozen lake. There were like little ice fishing like tents all on the lake. There's a hot spring that is right next to the hotel / like on the same ground. So when you check into the hotel, there's like a big kind of fire chill zone and like these floor to ceiling windows that look out over the frozen lake and like a little pond where a singular crane just roams this pond, which is actually like a hot spring that never freezes over. And this crane just like vibes out in this pond, and then sometimes will like perch on various trees, but he's just like always there. And we had our own personal balcony onsen soaking hot tub hot spring in our room, and that was next level.
Wow.
Yeah. To go take a quick body shower into a balcony hot tub that's filled with mineral water that softens like your skin and hair, and have your morning coffee while you like look out over a frozen lake, or even better yet, while it's like snowing and you're like sitting in this like balcony hot tub.
Dreamy.
Yeah.
A plus. And like how big long of a journey was that?
That was about an hour flight from Osaka, and then maybe like a 20-minute train ride, and then like a 5-minute cab ride. The town that surrounds it is weirdly not scenic. It looks like Manchester by the sea, oddly. But that was also kind of wild just to note that, like, wow, this town looks like shitty American town. Interesting.
They're everywhere, turns out.
And then you go to this like resort and you're like much living. More suits. But the, yeah. We did go into the town for lunch. Like, we got like a katsu pork. Like, that's like a fried pork cutlet with like rice and like curry sauce. It was one of the best meals that we had. That was also like $10 or something like that. But I think that this place, I want to say per person, if you wanted to get a room like the one we had, or even like a smaller one that still has the balcony hot tub, it's like $250 or $350 per person per night. And wow, that includes breakfast and dinner. So it is a good deal. You can't get that in America.
Not right now.
The one thing I will also say when it comes to making any restaurant reservations, what I think is a big grift, this website called TableAll that kind of gatekeeps all the like really bougie restaurants and says, like, if you want to make a reservation at this like Michelin starred restaurant, you have to go through us. We'll charge a $60 premium to make this reservation that's non-refundable. Like, the $60 is you just like pay. And then like, we'll make sure you get the reservation. And that's like kind of sometimes one of the only ways to get reservations at these nice restaurants. There's another.
That's a scam.
I know. That's a real
but
scam.
But a smart scam.
That's great. Like, by all means, I wish I had thought of it, but I didn't, unfortunately. The alternative to that, though, that we discovered is this website called Pocket Concierge that I think only charges like $5 or maybe $10 to make the reservation, and has a lot of this crossover on the restaurants. It might not have a lot of the really bougie Michelin ones, but we ate at a 3-star Michelin restaurant in Sapporo and were not impressed by it. It was actually one of like our least favorite meals that we ate. It was the most expensive meal I've ever had in my life, probably cost like $300, $250 per person just for the food, and was nothing really to write home about. So I would recommend maybe you ball out on like a sushi reservation, because we did do like a sushi reservation at like another place that was expensive but very, very worth it, and maybe like a tempura place. Mm-hmm. But these other places, like, they're going to serve you shark fin soup, and they're going to serve you that puffer fish that could, like, kill you, which are I've never had before, so I was excited on that level, even though I was sad about the sharks that have to die for the shark fin soup. But, like, would I ever want to pay that again? No. Was I happy that I paid that in the first place for that? No. I would have much rather just gone into like a ramen restaurant that is like a hole in the wall and had like a bowl of ramen. So I think it's like, be very strategic about where you decide to ball out on. Like, sushi would be worth it. We ate at like a teppanyaki restaurant, which is the like open grill, like Benihana style food preparation. Those types of places where people are like preparing like beef for you and like a coursed out meal probably end up being like $100 or $150 a person, But those to me is much more worth it than like going to some starred Michelin place that's completely silent where you just like sit in silence and eat exotic animals that have been killed for your consumption.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
I feel like I would skip.
Yeah, you can skip that. You can find
sounds
better
more
food.
Sheesh.
It's a little bit sheesh.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe if I was like a billionaire and it was the
devil
same
may
cost,
care money.
Yeah, like whatever. This is basically like a drop in the hat. I don't even know if I would still like it because it's just like I need a lot more than just shark fin stew.
What did it taste like?
That's the thing is like neither the shark fin or the pufferfish had like a distinct flavor to me. Like the pufferfish kind of tasted like maybe like a more, it's more translucent, like small slices of fish that are maybe a tad bit salty, maybe kind of like a harame or something like that, but not super distinctive. It's not like uni or something where you're like, oh, that's like a very specific taste. And the shark fin soup was kind of like a ribbed texture and like kind of like a fish stew. Again, not like a incredibly like distinctive flavor, in my opinion.
I am so inspired to go to Japan now more than I've ever been.
I think everyone should do it. It's like, especially like Sapporo, where we went after the Hokkaido like kai that we stayed in. That's like the birthplace of ramen. They had a snow festival and an ice festival there, which included these like the most insane ice sculptures I've ever seen. Like they have like an ice sculpture contest where you can see these ice sculptures that are super ornate and like 10 feet high. And walking through the streets at night with like all the lights on the ice and like a snow, and it's truly like a Michigan level snow piling up on street corners and like very, very cozy winter vibes. That was an A+ night of just like wandering the streets and having like a little bit of like a sake buzz looking at these stunning ice sculptures. Yeah. It feels like a magical place that you can't believe exists, and you can't believe people like live like this day to day.
Wow.
It's a real damn bitch you live like this, but the positive sense of that.
What a haul.
It's a real haul.
It's real haul.
Yeah.
I feel like there's so much more that we didn't even.
There are very few F's and a lot of A's, but I would say now's the time to go to Japan. And even in the winter, like it's cold, but if you just bring enough pairs of long underwear and you have like a puffer and some gloves,
maybe some heat inserts.
You can get a heat insert. You can also warm up like with a bowl of ramen. Also, a lot of stuff is like, some stuff is like all underground, like train stations. Like I had a bowl of ramen at like a Michelin starred ramen place in a train station. There's just like you line up and like get it and they get you in and out of there pretty fast. And that was like maybe $20.
All aboard. Delish. For that.
Yeah. So go. The only time that I think it might be uncomfortable to go to Japan is in the dead of summer, because I believe it does get deeply hot and humid.
Just like everywhere else on this planet nowadays.
Yeah. So Japan or bust. I'm trying
Japan,
to go back.
Japan, you guys?
Yeah. I think also I had a thought that I'll share, which I think that Tokyo is soon to become like the next Mexico City.
Okay.
I just had like a feeling about that, of just like a place where
food,
bougie tech
culture,
yeah, want to post up and spend a lot of time in.
And just take advantage of the Wi-Fi work WFH lifestyle.
Yeah, I think okay. That it could be, I think it could be the next spot. So yeah.
Love it. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for our first ever trip haul.
Comprehensive city guide haul. Let us know what you think. Let us know your Japan tips.
Yeah, would love.
And tricks. Another thing I would say is I would recommend just getting subways, like taking the subway or the train as much as possible, and like rarely doing taxi cabs, because those are really expensive, they add up quickly. And like, unless you're going late night, you're going home late night, the end of the night, like that's when it's worth it to take a cab, because like the subway is closed. But other than that, you can really train it to anywhere, and it's fast and easy to figure out.
Smart.
And convenient, and you'll save money.
Too niche tip. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us. We just planned our hauls for the next few months, and
there's some good ones headed your way.
We be hauling.
We'll stay hauling. You stay listening, and we'll niche you soon.
Bye.
We'll niche you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Too Niche is created and hosted by Laura Marie Shainhalls and me, Elizabeth Cott.
Today's episode was edited by AJ Mosley. If you love today's episode, please give us a 5-star A+ rating in Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast audio. And be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And be sure to smash the follow on Instagram and TikTok at this_is_too_niche.